Yes, Your Honor.
This is cause number 21-30316, Dixon versus Hazard Foods of Louisiana. Mr. Mark, pronounce your last name for me.
Frischertz, Your Honor.
Frischertz?
Yes.
And Ms. True?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Are you both ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Then, Mr. Frischertz, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Frischertz, and I represent appellant Daryl Dixon in this matter. This case is before the court pursuant to diversity jurisdiction, applying Louisiana law. And it arises out of an incident that occurred in December 2018, where Mr. Dixon pulled into the parking lot of Wendy's, owned by defendant Hazard Foods. And as he stepped out of his vehicle and walked across the front, he tripped on a piece of rebar that was protruding from the parking lot. After he fell, when Dixie employees came to the scene, he was assessed, sought medical care, and some photographs were taken of the parking meter. The defendants ultimately moved for summary judgment in this matter, claiming that there was a lack of evidence of constructive notice under Louisiana's merchant liability statute. The district court granted summary judgment, finding a lack of constructive notice, and we have appealed that decision.
So that raises a point for me. Looking at your notice of appeal, it says you're appealing record document 41, which is the order denying your Rule 59, Rule 60 motion for reconsideration. Are you appealing any other document than record document 41? I'm just trying to get, like, ordinarily we would say, well, this is summary judgment appeal, de novo review, but the parties are saying abuse of discretion. So I'm just trying to figure out what you're appealing.
Yeah, but Your Honor, the rest of that sentence, we go on to say that we are appealing the district court's granting of summary judgment. There's a complicated procedural history, admittedly due to errors by my office, where—
Right, but do you, in that part, so that part of the sentence I don't understand, do you mean to be referencing another document besides record document 41? It's a different document.
No, Your Honor, we are appealing record document 41 because if the judgments of the district court were reviewed, the district court initially granted summary judgment based on no opposition. We filed an opposition the following day prior to the submission deadline, but still beyond the 8 days prior to that. The district court granted that leave to file that untimely opposition and ordered that our opposition be filed into the record and stated that our opposition would be considered in the context or within our motion, our Rule 59 or Rule 60 motion. The district court actually considered our motion a Rule 54 motion, where the district court said that prior judgment was actually interlocutory. And in that document number 41, which is tab 4 of the excerpts, and page 287 of the record, the district court re-examined, if we look at page 290, the district court said summary judgment re-examined, and on that page states, now having considered Dixon's opposition to Hazard Foods' motion for summary judgment, the court determines and goes on to say that it finds that there's no constructive knowledge. And so from our perspective, based on what the district court did, granting our leave and then considering this a Rule 54 motion, the appropriate standard of review is de novo because in document 41, the district court essentially, you know, under Rule 54, re-granted their motion for summary judgment now on the merits as opposed to based on there being no opposition. And so we submit that while the procedural history is complicated, admittedly due to error by my office, the court, this case is before the court on a granting of a motion for summary judgment, and therefore de novo is the proper standard of review.
Is that what you say in your brief? Do you say de novo is a standard of review in your brief or abuse of discretion?
I mean, say de novo, Your Honor.
Okay. All right.
And so Mr. Dixon, for purposes of the summary judgment filed by the defendant was solely on the issue of notice, and therefore, no other elements of plaintiff's burden are at issue. We presented evidence, as is customarily the case in these slip and fall cases. The plaintiff is never present when the condition arises, and therefore, in almost every case, it's always through circumstantial evidence that a plaintiff seeks to prove notice on the defendant. I guess in the rare circumstance where a defendant admits they knew of the condition, and maybe where there's some video that could establish that. But in this case, as in many, it's through circumstantial evidence. And we submit that under the summary judgment standard, the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to Mr. Dixon, that the circumstantial evidence shows that there's an issue of material fact upon which reasonable minds could differ and a reasonable juror could find constructive notice. And this is based on two pieces of evidence, Your Honors. First, it's based on the photograph that's in the record at page 272. And second, it's based on the testimony of the general manager of Hazza Foods, which is in the record at page 230 through approximately 240. And what those two pieces of evidence establish, the photograph, for example, shows the dislodged parking bumper. This parking bumper is held in place by two pieces of rebar that stick up from the concrete floor. It shows the parking bumper dislodged. You see the piece of rebar, and you see missing concrete where the rebar would have pushed through the dislodged parking bumper. The testimony of Mr. Paul, the general manager, was that the parking lot would have been inspected around between 1 and 2 p.m. that day.
If you don't mind, I'd like to take these one at a time. So you were talking about the photo and the circumstantial evidence that the photo provides?
Yes, Your Honor.
So tell me how it is that the photo provides some evidence of notice.
Okay. The photo itself, Your Honor, provides circumstantial evidence that this parking bumper had been dislodged for a period of time, which is what the law in Louisiana requires. We don't have to prove a specific period of time. We have to prove it's just a period of time. The question of whether or not that
But a photo represents one moment in time.
It does, Your Honor. But if we look at that photo, we see several things. First, the rebar where it came out of the parking bumper broke away pieces of the concrete. We do not see any of those broken pieces of the concrete in this photo, where you would expect if that parking bumper had recently been dislodged from that piece of rebar, the broken pieces of concrete would be present on the ground near the parking bumper. There's not a single piece of broken concrete. And from this, a reasonable trier of fact could infer that that parking bumper was not recently dislodged, but instead had been dislodged some time ago. Additionally, the parking bumper has dirt and growth because it's been outside on it. And we see in the cracked concrete part, there's no evidence of recent cracking. There's no evidence the concrete is not clean looking, which is what you would expect had there been a crack. And then additionally, and I know the district court disagreed with us on this, but there's no scrapes or marks on the ground where the parking bumper would have slid across or been scraped across the concrete parking lot. And from this, a reasonable trier of fact could infer that the parking bumper had been dislodged not moments before the accident, but instead a substantial period of time or a period of time before the accident. And this is why, Your Honor, I was moving on to Mr. Paul's testimony, because he said the parking lot would have been inspected after the lunch hour rush between 1 and 2 o'clock, and that nothing was noted about the parking bumper at that time.
Does the record reflect how large the parking lot was, Mr. Fisher's?
It does not.
Okay.
The record doesn't reflect that, Your Honor.
What about the photo? Was there something about leaves?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, mention that.
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the top part of the photograph, there are leaves that have been pushed behind the parking bumper and they are collected in that area. And we argued that that was further circumstantial evidence that this parking bumper had been dislodged for a period of time because it allowed for debris and leaves to collect behind it while there's no debris or leaves on the other side of the parking bumper. In other words, a reasonable trier of fact could look at this and say, well, if there was, if those leaves were fresh, they would have been everywhere in the photograph, but instead they're solely located, pushed up behind the parking bumper. Now, and this gets to the
burn. Couldn't that have been minutes before?
Well, and that, we submit, Your Honor, that the district court thought that that evidence could be interpreted that way. And for purpose, let's recall, this is on summary judgment. So the question is not whether we have fully proven our case, but instead whether, based on the evidence, a reasonable trier fact could infer what the plaintiff, you know, that the plaintiff could prevail. And that obviously includes the possibility that a reasonable trier fact could infer that the plaintiff doesn't prevail. And so, but in the context of a summary judgment standard, viewed in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, the evidence, instead of weighing that evidence and making a determination, the district court should, in our opinion, find that there's a genuine issue of material fact for the jury to make that assessment as to what proper inferences should be drawn from the photograph.
Mr. Frischertz, the photo I'm looking at is on ROA 262. So I think it's the same photo we're talking about.
It is, it's located in both spots in the
right. Right, okay, 62. Looking at it in color, it looks like the ground is wet. Is that right? Is it in the record it was raining that day?
It is in the record that the, I don't know, it wasn't, it's in the record that the ground was wet, Your Honor. That's in the testimony of Mr. Paul as well.
And it's in the record, this happened in December in where, Jefferson Parish?
Yes, Your Honor. Happened in December 9th, 2018 in Jefferson Parish.
Okay, thank you.
And so the lack, if I go back, the lack of any broken concrete in the area where the parking bumper would have become dislodged from that piece of rebar, we submit is compelling circumstantial evidence. You would, had this recently occurred, and going back to what I was saying, the parking lot was supposedly inspected between 1 and 2 p.m. This accident occurred at 3:45 p.m. And therefore, if the parking bumper was not dislodged around between 1 and 2 p.m., then let me state it this way. The parking bumper was either dislodged or not dislodged. Those are the only two choices. And so if it was not dislodged at 1 or 2 p.m., but was dislodged at 3:45, then we submit you certainly would see evidence of the broken concrete in the photograph in the record.
Mr. Frischertz, is that hole in the parking bumper I'm looking at, is that where the rebar was? I don't know. You may not know this, but I don't know. Was the rebar in that hole or somewhere else?
The rebar was in that hole, and it's a little, I guess, because of the angle of the photograph, the parking bumper was pushed with force enough to break the concrete and have the rebar push through and the parking bumper dislodged from where the rebar. But yes, there's a hole that is intentionally placed there for the rebar. And then there's where the rebar broke through the edge of that hole, causing the missing part of the parking bumper.
Does the record reflect how tall that piece of rebar is?
It does not specifically. I believe there's evidence that it was several inches. There's no specific measurement.
Last question. I mean, I ask all these questions because now we can pretend like we're on CSI New Orleans. But this second piece of concrete at the top of the picture, what is that? Is it a curb? Is it a sidewalk? Do you know?
Yes, that is the edge of the parking lot itself. That is a curb that is part of, and I wish I wasn't there. I wish I had a more drawn out photograph. That curb in the upper right-hand corner is actually the curbing, the permanent curbing that runs along the length of the parking lot.
Okay, thank you.
And had this parking bumper not been dislodged, it would have been straight. And so at the end of the day, the dispute surrounds, under the summary judgment standard, what reasonable inferences from the testimony could a trier of fact, and obviously the district court did not make the inferences that we sought to have made. However, the district court, in reaching its decision, made its own inferences instead of, we submit, asking the question, could a reasonable trier of fact infer from the photograph and the testimony of Mr. Paul that this parking bumper had been dislodged for some period of time before Mr. Dixon's accident? I see my time is up, Your Honors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. True.
Good morning, judges. My name is Catherine True on behalf of Haza Foods of Louisiana, LLC. That's a company that operates Wendy's and we're probably in the current appeal. So I think just to address some things I noted on during plaintiff's counsel's argument, I think that the number one issue, or there's one thing that I think is mistaken, and it's my understanding of the law under the merchant liability statute and Louisiana Supreme Court interpretation of constructive notice and requirements that there has to be some temporal element. There's a mandatory temporal element, so there has to be some proof that the damage-causing condition was present for a certain period of time or any period of time before the incident. Here, the damage-causing condition is the actual exposure of the rebar. Plaintiff's counsel is asking you to assume that the concrete came out and the rebar was all exposed all at one time. When the parking bumper begins to become loose is not the damage-causing condition. The damage-causing condition that the temporal notice the temporal element applies to is when the parking bumper is moved such that the rebar is exposed, because that's the condition that the plaintiff tripped over. And actually, I had a similar case. It's called Gordon versus Dollar General. It wasn't cited in my brief because I didn't anticipate this when I prepared my brief, but figured it could come up. So I went ahead and wrote down the citation. It's an Eastern District of Louisiana case, Sarah Vance, 2017 Westlaw 3721530. And that case involved a motion for summary judgment in a wet mat case. The facts are a little different, but the plaintiff argued that it would take time for the mat to get wet enough. And Judge Vance said, no, no, no. The damage-causing condition is once the mat is wet enough that they'll split. So the process getting it there isn't what you need the temporal element for. And she said, you must show that the hazardous condition existed for a period of time, not that it developed over time. And the development of, I mean, it could have been broken and moved back, covering up the rebar, and then that is not what the temporal element is here. The temporal element is the actual time it moved in this specific case. So
it's true. I just don't get that. I'm looking at the picture. You're looking at the picture. I'm looking at ROA 262. Are you telling me that looking at that picture, there's only one reasonable inference to be made for when that rebar became exposed?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's that?
Well, I don't have the burden of proving it.
Yeah, I know. So, what are you telling me that there's only one reasonable inference to be made? That no trier of fact could look at that picture and say, huh, somebody moved that parking bumper. I don't know how it happened. A car hit it. And I'm looking at it. It's broken. It doesn't look like it happened like an hour before. There's leaves all over the thing.
Yeah,
might have happened 6 months ago. It might have happened last week. I guess it could have happened an hour ago. Seems unlikely, but I don't know when that happened from looking at that picture.
Sure, and so the problem, yeah, I agree with that. But the problem is that's not the standard based on the Louisiana Supreme Court ruling in Babin versus Winn-Dixie, which is cited in my brief, and White versus Walmart, which is also cited. Louisiana Supreme Court in both of those cases said there had to be a positive show. There's gotta be positive evidence. You can't speculate that it was moved. It's a high burden for a plaintiff to meet, admittedly.
What more would he have to show than this picture with all these yellow leaves drifted behind the thing? You know, and with a broken, it's all broken. I mean, that obviously happened. I can't even fathom what else happened in this case, but that the thing was moved. What other evidence would he have to show a temporal element? This looks like a smoking gun to me.
So, Judge, there's one thing I'd like to point out that kind of answers the question, and tell me if this isn't direct enough. This is speculative, and the reason it's speculative not only is what it shows, in my opinion, but the fact there's nothing in the record that times when this photo was taken. So they're asking you to speculate that this photo was taken right after the accident, when in the trial court records, there's nothing there. That it accurately shows the scene
trial
at the time of
trial. At trial, wouldn't they have to authenticate the photo?
Yes, they would have to authenticate it, but I think...
Well, on summary judgment, isn't it true, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not a trial attorney, but does the evidence only have to be in a form that could be capable of authentication?
Yes, I believe so, but I think you have to make it relevant, and there's nothing in the record. It's not so much an authentication issue, it's a relevance issue. There's nothing in the record on summary judgment that says this photo, which just shows the moved parking bumper, or nothing in the record, the whole trial court record, that says that this photo was taken right after the accident.
Are you saying that there's a fact issue as to whether this photo is even of the Wendy's parking lot where this happened?
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I'm just saying that we can't infer all of the things plaintiff counsel is asking us to infer under Babin, which requires a positive showing, as well as infer that this was taken right after the accident. I think that just adds to it. But let me tell you.
Pardon me, did you say that the record shows that the photo was taken right after the accident?
No, Your Honor. I was saying that there's no evidence in the record, the trial court record, when it was taken, how long after the accident it was taken. Yes, and so the record does not reflect that when it was taken. Also, Judge, to kind of circle back on what the photo shows, the leaves, I think the trial court got it right. The leaves, the trial court said that's not relevant to the temporal element. The trial judge said, if anything, it seems to negate the temporal element because it appears that there's no leaves in front of it, but there are only leaves behind it. So it must have kind of moved. It seems to establish that it moved.
That doesn't seem like summary judgment reasoning to me. I mean, I don't know why the leaves are there. I mean, I can see the leaves. I can see some in front of it. I can see some under it. What if it was cobwebs?
Yeah, well, I guess that is one way to look at it. But I think the main issue here is there's got to be some positive showing. We can't say, oh, well, what, somebody could see it this way or someone... it can't be speculation. And I want to talk to y'all about a case that I think is very applicable here. And it was actually cited by plaintiff's counsel. And it shows that case is Guidry versus Brookshire. It's Louisiana Supreme Court 2020. And in that case, the plaintiff submitted surveillance video. The plaintiff said that there was 70 minutes of surveillance video before the accident, and that there was nothing to show that you couldn't see the substance. So they said, because you don't see anyone creating the spill, the substance must have been present the entire video. So they said, this is our temporal constructive notice. This is our proof that this is our positive showing of the temporal element. And the lower court agreed with that, and the Louisiana Supreme Court in 2020 said, no, under Babin, that is not a positive showing, the absence of something. And I think that's applicable here. They're saying, look, there's no scratches. That's not a positive showing. They're relying on a general manager at Ahaza Food, which operates Wendy's, testimony when he was asked about whether he would expect there to be scratches if it moved, and he said, I assume there would be scratches, some sort of threat, that's not a positive showing. I don't believe, my view, looking at the leaves, there's nothing to show that these leaves weren't here before the parking bumper was moved. I don't think that's a positive showing. I think based on the Louisiana Supreme Court reasoning and ruling about what there must be a temporal element of, and that's the damage-causing condition.
So, what I hear you saying is we need to look at Babin, we need to look at Guidry to see what specifically is the temporal showing that is the plaintiff's burden to make. Okay. Can I ask you about something I asked Mr. Frischertz about?
Sure.
What are we reviewing in this case? Are we reviewing a grant of summary judgment or something else?
Okay, so I actually looked into this issue extensively. We're reviewing a grant of summary judgment. I think it looks like based on, you caught something I may not have caught about the record number he references. It was my understanding, just to be completely forthcoming, that he was appealing the grant of the summary judgment as well as the motion for reconsideration. It's my position that you look at the grant, you look at the summary judgment, you look at our motion for summary judgment, and you see that we submitted sufficient evidence, a summary judgment, and there was no opposition when the judge ruled on it. Yeah. Then you look under the higher burden, the abuse of discretion burden, when you review the court's decision to deny the motion for reconsideration. And it's just, that's what happens in cases when your opposition wasn't filed until after the court ruled on it, and it's unfortunate. That's my position.
The reason I ask is because there's obviously a different standard if you're reviewing a Rule 59 or Rule 60. Harder for the appellant to win than reviewing a summary judgment, which is de novo, right? So I agree with you as far as I can tell, the notice of appeal specifies Record Document 41. When I was an appellate attorney, if I wrote I was always paranoid about not appealing the right judgment, so I included all the possible record documents that I wanted to appeal to make sure I didn't give up my appeal on anything. But I do agree that Record Document 41 goes back into the merits of the summary judgment, which is frankly just confusing to me. Do you think it was correct for the judge to review this as a Rule 54 motion?
Honestly, I do. And it doesn't help me, but I'm just going to be completely forthcoming. Yeah. I do think it's a 54 motion because it was before the judgment was ruled on. However, it's still a higher standard. It's my understanding that it's still a higher standard under Rule 54 because he has a lot of discretion under Rule 54, and actually I think more discretion than under a Rule 60 motion. So that is my position on that issue.
Do you think we review the summary judgment de novo here?
I do. Okay. But I don't think you look at his opposition. I think you look at whether we submitted enough evidence. Judge Duncan, you mentioned the Babin and the Guidry case. Yeah. I'd also encourage the court, when you're prepping for oral argument, you may come across a different, more cases. There's a federal case that's very similar to Guidry, Fifth Circuit, Taylor versus Walmart, 464 Federal Appendix 337. Same thing, they show a surveillance video and basically say the absence of the creation of the condition. And I just felt like it was relevant because of that.
I don't want to tell you what to argue, but has counsel been able to respond to these citations?
No, but he has not been able to respond to that citation. I will just.
You can try to, I guess you can try to file a Rule 28J if it's proper, but I would want counsel on the other side to be able to tell me.
Okay. That makes sense. The other thing I wanted to say are the cases that were cited by plaintiffs are just distinguishable besides the Guidry case, which I think helped the defendant in this case. The Blake versus Walmart case is a case where there's leaking dishwasher detergent, and it was a trail that was 40 feet long. and the Connor versus Brookshire case is a leaking cooler that had a pretty big leak. There was evidence in the record on that. And in both of those cases, that's positive proof. It's circumstantial evidence, but it's also not speculative. It's positive proof. And I think that's where plaintiff and I aren't seeing eye to eye. I think there's a mistake there. I think there can be circumstantial evidence to show the temporal element. It's just got to be a positive showing based on Louisiana Supreme Court and this court's prior ruling under 19800.6, which is the merchant liability statute. I do want to point out that the party cited 2317.1, which is another premise, another negligence statute. However, it's the same. You have to show constructive notice under both, but in the footnote 16 to the trial court's ruling, they said it was 19800.6, and on my review of the cases, the trial court got that right. So I'd ask, I believe that's all I have if there are no additional questions for me, and I just ask that you affirm the trial court and grant summary judgment. I mean, affirm the trial court's grant of summary judgment.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor, briefly, Mark Frischert again for Mr. Dixon. Touching on what was appealed and the standard of review, we appealed rule the docket number 41 because that was the case, that was where the trial court or the district court, excuse me, under rule 54, re-examined and addressed summary judgment on the merits and held that summary judgment was appropriate. Prior to that, the prior ruling, which the court found interlocutory, and I'll submit the issue of whether the trial court was correct to consider it a Rule 54 motion and to grant us leave has not been appealed by anyone. The only issue that's been appealed is the granting of summary judgment. And so I agree. I mean, I think the trial court or the district court was correct that Rule 54 governs. And under Rule 54, it is a reexamination of an interlocutory ruling. And at that point, what is material is what was the ruling on reexamination. And therefore, we submit it's a summary judgment and de novo review applies. On the issue of positive evidence, I would ask the court to look at the cases cited in our brief as well as our reply brief, where positive evidence is not synonymous with direct evidence. It is absolutely clear, the Louisiana Supreme Court has held, that circumstantial evidence and direct evidence are synonymous in these types of cases.
Mr. Frischer, do you think you have a problem with Babin and Guidry from Louisiana Supreme Court because counsel on the other side cited those cases in particular?
I do not. In fact, I think Guidry supports us, and Babin, we cite it as distinguishable. So in Babin, there were toothpicks that fell on the ground, and there was no way to infer how long they had been there. In Guidry, it was a leaking cooler where the drip pan had overflowed. And in that case, summary judgment was denied because it was held that that's a process that takes place over time, and therefore the temporal element was satisfied, although plaintiff couldn't prove exactly when it started overflowing. Plaintiff, the evidence, the inferences could be drawn that because that happens over time, that it existed for a non-specific period of time, which is all the plaintiff needs to prove. In Lewis v. Jazz Casino, it's a Fourth Circuit case, but it cites and quotes several Supreme Court cases from the last actually 20 years on this issue, and that citation is 245 Southern 3rd 68. We cite it in our reply brief. It clearly establishes that we don't need an eyewitness, we don't need direct evidence. Instead, circumstantial evidence can be used to satisfy our burden. And the definition of circumstantial evidence is evidence of a fact or a set of facts, in this case, the photograph of the bumper combined with the testimony of the general manager, from which the existence of another fact can be inferred. And we submit that the inferences can go both ways. We don't dispute that. But in the context of a motion for summary judgment, the fact that they can go both ways is itself proof that the summary judgment should have been denied. I don't know how a trier of fact would ultimately rule in this case, but based on the evidence presented, there are inferences which can be reasonably drawn that this parking bumper, and more importantly, this piece of rebar, was exposed for a period of time, that it had not happened moments before plaintiff fell, but instead was there for a period of time. And as such, we've satisfied our burden of showing constructive notice. I do agree this case is governed by LARS 9:2800.6, but the standard under 23.7.1 of constructive notice and the standard under the merchant statute are virtually identical. In fact, the case law goes back and forth on it. So it's kind of a distinction without a difference as far as the way we've cited it and all argued it, Your Honor. Anyway, that's all I have unless there's any other questions. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
All right, thank you, counsel. Thanks to you both. The court will take this matter under advisement.